Accession number 31395, Reel 1.
Stan Hollingsworth, Reel 1. Stan, can you tell me where and when you were born, please?
I was born in Fethacaly, which is a suburb of Liverpool. I think it was at Johnville Road. And I remember at the end of the road, there was the local cemetery. And I used to see the funeral horses coming along with their plumes and everything like that. And that's where I was born. But my dad worked for the old LMS. He was a clerk at Aintree Loco Shed. And my grandfather also worked for the LMS, but he was the caretaker of a railwayman's lodging house. Now, the train crews used to bring their trains into Liverpool, and if they had to stay overnight, before this lodging house opened, they were in bed and breakfast, and they were drunk next day. So the company decided they would have this big place. I think it was about three stories high. It was living accommodation for my grandparents. And there was a big kitchen where the crews could make their own breakfast or meals. And then there was a dining room, and then there were separate cubicles with beds. And my grandmother had to do all the washing as well. So all the sheets and everything every week. And in those days, of course, there was no washing machines at all. There was a coal-fired big boiler which had to be fired up. They'd do the washing, and then it was hand mangling. And to dry them, they had this drying oven. And they were like trolleys on wheels. They were probably about 2 foot 6, 3 foot wide, and they just slide in and all. And it was all heating. And then, of course, it all had to be ironed. Well, we lived, that was the lodging house was actually in Aintree, which was absolutely straight across the road from the race course. So if you got on the roof, you could see the finishing post. It was actually on Melling Road, which is, you know, part of the race course, really. So that's what happened there. And, of course, unfortunately, my gran wasn't in very good health. So although we lived in Fethacaly, which is probably a mile and a half away, from time to time we had to come back and stay with Grandad and Grandma while she was, you know, recovering from whatever illness it was. And, you know, she eventually did die. Anyhow, that's where I started off my life.
What about your early education?
Hmm?
What about your early education?
My early education. Well, it was quite funny because I've got an inkling. I could be wrong on this, but I think in those days you didn't have to go to school till you were about 6 or 7. I think. I'm not certain on that. Anyhow, time came and I was put in the local school, and I probably got measles. So the family doctor must have had a word with my mother and said, well, look, it's not on, you know, it needs better care than that. I was quite a sickly kid, actually. So he said, I know a little private school, Miss Prowse's. So that's where I went. That was just a big house with a big garden, you know, it was fine. And then my dad seemed to want to move up in the world, so we were renting this house in Fethacaly. So we actually bought a house in Oral Park, which was a bit upmarket. Because in those days, you know, buying a house, you know, anyhow, he got a mortgage. I think it was with the Halifax, actually. And we settled down there. And I went to this Miss Prowse's. And then I moved up to a school which was a bit nearer. It was called Aintree High School, which sounded very posh. It was actually a tin shack in the back garden. But it was extremely good. And even at that young age, I was taught French, of all things. And it was a mixed school, you know, and we had fun. And I remember one day they took us all out in the garden, and over the top came the R-100, the airship. And we said, what is this airship coming over here? And it was absolutely brilliant. So, anyhow, I stayed there, you know, until it was time to change schools again. So where do we go now? Anyhow, Dad decided that he wanted me to have a decent education. And he got me into Bootle Secondary School, which was a paying school. And once again, illness struck. The day I was supposed to sit my entrance exam, I was ill. So I had to go, when I'd recovered, I had to go back and take it all by myself. And anyhow, I passed all right, so I went and I was a member of Bootle Secondary School, which is, you know, it was a good school, you know. He even taught us Latin.
Did you have any favourite subjects?
Not really. I just mucked in, you know. But I found I had quite a bent for French. Well, for written French. I was never taught spoken French. I could write French. In fact, many, many years later, I found some essays I'd written in French, and I looked at them, I thought, did I do those? You know, I couldn't believe it, you know. Anyhow, my dad, I say he worked in the loco shed, and he seemed to have a bent for improvisation, and he suggested various methods of employing the train crews in a more economic way. In other words, you know, don't put them up overnight, tell them to go to this, that and the other. And this must have impressed the spouse that be, because the next thing was, oops, sticks again, Manchester. So, you know, we had to, before that, while I was at Bootle Secondary School, we went up Markety and went to Crosby, of all places, you know, on the Mersey with the sandbanks and everything like that. Anyhow, so we moved to Manchester, and it was a question of finding a house. Funny enough, my granddad's brother, a chap called Percy Rowles, that's R-O-W-L-E-S, not Rolls-Royce, run a small building company, and he was building houses for sale. So Dad went to him, and we bought this house in Sale, which is just over the border in Cheshire. A three-bedroom semi. I think he paid about £650 for it, or something like that, some ridiculous price. And then it was a question of where do you go to school? So I went down to the nearest secondary school, which was Stretford Grammar School, and that was too expensive. So the nearest other school was Sale Central School. I never heard of a central school before. But it turned out to be absolutely brilliant. We were using the same textbooks as we were using in the secondary school, and it was completely free. And they taught us all the same. The only subject we didn't take was Latin. Well, I didn't worry us very much. But they were very, very happy times, you know. I can still remember that the headmaster was Mr. Lofthouse, otherwise known as the boss. And then we had Lofty Wilde, who was the physics master. We had Babs, who was the geography mistress. We had Ma Beans, Miss Hines, who was the history mistress. Pug Wainwright, who was an ex-World War I veteran, who was the English master. And Chick Williams, who was the French master. I can still remember their names, you know. And we had some really good times. But the boss, Mr. Lofthouse, he had a thing about Gilbert and Sullivan. And every year he used to put on one of their operettas. And he used to use the 40 years, just before we left for this cast. You know, it was all the cast were all school kids, and they used to hire the local town hall for the Friday and Saturday. We used to give a performance on Friday for the school, and Saturday for the public. So when I hit that that time, it was Isle Ansley. And I ended up in the Peers Chorus. Bow, bow, ye lower middle class. You know, the only thing he wouldn't let us have swords. He said, "No way are you having swords." But we were all dressed up, you know. And there was one character there. He was a sentry in his full military uniform. Well, of course, Pug Wainwright was all right. He'd been through the military, so he could, you know, tell him how to do rifles and all that. But he was a big lad, and my God, when he was dressed up in his red uniform and his busby, you know, and when all night long the shop remains on sentry go to save monotony, he exercises all his brains, that is, assuming that he's got any. Can I have a break?
Sam, did you have any other hobbies at that stage?
Yeah, cycling. What happened, actually going back a little bit, it came time to do the final exam, that's either the matriculation or school certificate. And whether I got this right or wrong, I don't know, but somebody said, of course, you have to make a £5 deposit, and if you don't pass, you don't get your money back. And knowing money was tight, I thought, well, I don't fancy, you know, letting my dad down. Anyhow, one of our class I had left, when I was 15, when you were 15, you could leave school, and he was working for an electric cable company in Trafford Park. And he tipped me off, they were advertising for staff, so I replied, and I got a job. And actually, the company was down the side of Manchester United football ground. The ground was there, there was a road, and then there was a factory, and then there was a canal and the factory on the side. So I ended up, as they call it, on the door. Now, we had a uniform commissionaire, you know, from the all his uniform, and I had to do it at his beck and call. If somebody called to see somebody in the company, he'd tell me, go and find Mr. So-and-so. And sometimes he'd send me off to Manchester to do kennel of bus. Didn't trust you with money, tokens. So that was quite good, actually. But from where you went from there, depended on where there was a vacancy. You could go to any department, but there was quite a turnover of staff. And eventually, oh, I know, we used to have to start at 8 o'clock, and we had to help to open the post, you know. And we were paying, there's a big table about this big with a lino chalk, and before, we used to get in a bit early, and we used to play push penny. A halfpenny and a penny and a comb and goal post, and we used to play this until the chief cashier used to come in and supervise and open the post. And I remember one day somebody tore a cheque into, and we thought, oh God, you know, what's going to happen to that? You know, it was all right, but we didn't know. You know. Anyhow, I say, there was an opening came up in the cost and wages department. So I went in there and I was helping with the wages. Of course, in those days they had to make out their time cards, you know, and I had to sort them into and as to what they were doing and whatnot. And then from there you progressed to being foreman's clerks. You went down in the factory and worked with the foreman in the little office down there, and you worked your way completely round the factory, so you knew exactly how these cables were made. And then when there was room, you came back and you came into the cost department, and because There were no computers. We had comptometers, you know, and girls on comptometers and this, that, and the other. I haven't seen it before, a slide, and there was a big cylinder with a with a loose thing around it, and it was a slide rule. You could actually work out things on the slide rule. Couldn't believe it. I've never seen one before. I've seen an ordinary slide rule, but never anything like that. Anyhow, we settled down, you know, and then, as I say, I bought myself a bike. And I had one, but it was a sit-up bike, and I wanted one with drop handlebars. And I knew exactly what I wanted. I wanted the Sun Vitesse. It was blue. So I ordered one from the local cycle shop, and I think I paid so much a week for it. And this particular bike, the rear wheel had a free wheel on one side and a fixed wheel on the other, and you could take it off and you could turn it. And I wanted a special size fixed wheel because I'd worked out what I want, a fairly high gear. And so I got that, and I put toe clips on the pedals. And once you got into the rhythm, you could go miles and miles and miles with no problem at all. And I could out-accelerate cars from standing still, you know. So that was... I don't know how many miles I must have done. Thousands, actually.
Whereabouts did you used to go to? Where would you go?
Well, we used to go up into Derbyshire, Castleton, you know, Blue John Mines and places like that. Southport. Now, you remember Dave Cameron had his bike pinched the other day. Well, I left my brand new Sun Vitesse on the grass outside Southport Funfair. No change, no nothing. Came back, still there. They didn't pinch bikes in there. You might get your pump pinched, but not your bike. Oh, yeah, we used to go all the places, Southport. Liverpool, under the Mersey Tunnel, and New Brighton. I had a little mileage thing on the front, you know, I used to clicky clicky. God knows how many miles, it must have been hundreds. But, you know, we went to Blackpool for a weekend, you know, a holiday weekend, or Whitsun or something, I know, no problem at all. And there was one hill just outside Manchester, I've forgotten the name now, and it was our intention, we're going to climb that somehow, and I did it one day, but I was knackered by the time I got up to the top. Honor was satisfied. No, that was, you know, I had a couple of mates, and we used to go everywhere on bikes. Never. But while I was working for this cable company, W2 Glover it was called, one of the lads persuaded the company to let us form a football team. So they said, okay, you know, we'll provide the strip, you'll have to provide your own boots. So a year or so, we played just friendlies. And then they got us into a league, and we used to play the home matches on the banks of the Manchester Ship Canal, and I played for them for about three years and scored three goals, all in one match, but I didn't keep the ball. No, it really was a happy time. And then of course war broke out.
Had you had any kind of anticipation that war was going to break out prior to 1939?
I don't think, you know, I was 18. I don't think we really took it in, to be quite. We were so busy, you know, enjoying ourselves, and I don't think it. I don't think it really sunk in. But I know that the day war broke, I was at home with my parents in Sale, and I was listening to the radio, and And Chamberlain said, as of 11 o'clock, we are at war with Germany. I thought, oh, bloody hell. Because, you know, having seen all the films of what happened in the First World War and the terrible conditions, I thought, well, I don't want to get mixed up in the infantry or anything like that. So I talked to my couple of pals and we said, well, you know, maybe we can get into something, some kind of volunteer. You know. And so one of them said, hey, what about going in the signals and getting to be dispatch riders? Well, yeah, well, why not, you know? So we found the recruiting office for the Royal Corps of Signals and went down there and queued up. And the first thing they said was, do you know the Morse code? And we all, no, we don't know. And we'll go away and learn it. So we thought, oh, to hell with that, you know, we're not interested in the Morse code. We want to be, dispatch riders. So we thought, well, all we can do now is wait and see what happens, you see. We knew we were going to get called up sometime or other. So we just sat back and waited. And then, of course, they formed the Home Guard. And we formed a platoon in the works, actually. So one of the foremen had been in the First World War, so, you know, he taught us drill and rifle drill, and we actually went up the moors outside Manchester and did shooting. We had Ross 500 rifles, not the Enfield rifle. These were the .5s, not the .5. And turned out I wasn't a bad shot, actually. I'd never fired a rifle in my life. Anyhow,
what instruction had you got on that? Had you done an awful lot of just kind of instruction with the rifle prior to firing it?
Me?
Yeah.
Only to slow arms and, you know, nothing else. No, I never handled a gun in my life. But we used to. It shows you how fit we were, because you had to do guard duty at night, some, you know, in rotation. So we would guard the factory grounds, you know, with two of us would patrol for a couple of hours with a rifle and five rounds of ammunition, and God knows what would happen if we saw the German, I don't know. So that was and then if it happened on Friday, you know, Friday night, you had to go to work on Saturday morning. You play football in the afternoon and then go dancing at night. And that's how we didn't realise how fit we were, to be quite honest. Anyhow, as I say, you know, we just bided our time and thought, well, you know, when the time comes, they'll call us. So anyhow.
Had you been issued with uniforms with the Home Guard?
Oh, yes. Eventually, yeah.
What had you started out with?
I can't remember. I think it was just proper. I think it was an armband, but I can't remember that. But I know we did get. We did get uniforms. Yeah, we did get uniforms.
Did you have any heavier weapons and rifles?
No. Just purely rifles. Now it was a. They did. We did have form a little anti-tank unit. And learned how to throw Molotov cocktails. I don't think that would have been very effective, but you know.
How did you throw the Molotov cocktail? Is there a special way of doing it?
Well, funny enough, we had to do it lying down. We were lying down, and we had to. And the idea was you had to lob it so that it went down the hatch of the German tank. I don't know who thought that one up, but, you know, suicide. Yeah. Anyhow, that nothing happened about that. So,
when did you actually join the Home Guard, roughly?
I can't remember.
Was it the local defence volunteers when you joined, or was it the Home Guard?
LDV. Yeah, and then it was, I'm sure it was. Yeah, I'm not quite certain on that. 42, probably about 1940 or something like that, 40, 41. Anyhow, I did get called up to report to a medical centre in Manchester.
When would that have been?
That would have been about 40, 41, for a medical. I thought, well, lovely. Yeah, having been a sickly child, having a mumps, measles, scarlet fever, the lot. Oh, blimey, he said, we've got the Slim Brigade here, haven't we? No, he said, you're all right. Oh, God. So, the funny thing was, just going back a bit, I had to register, they were called, you had to register and say which of the services you wanted to join. So I thought, I'll try the Air Force, you see. The lady who was taking the particulars, I said Air Force, is flying. I said, well, of course it's flying Air Force. Didn't realise I'd bloody volunteered for flying duties. Didn't realise that until some time later. I got a.
So at that time was the Royal Air Force. If you volunteer, you had to volunteer for the Royal Air Force. Was it?
Oh yes. Our crew was completely voluntary. Yeah. Yeah.
What attracted you to the RAF?
I don't know. I thought maybe it was an easier option. I'd never been to sea, and I thought, blimey, and I didn't fancy foot slogging it. I thought, well, I might be a clerk or something like that. But anyhow, it was while I was still in Manchester. And then my dad got promotion again, and this time it was down to London. Now he was chief clerk at Wilston Loco Shed, which is just outside London. So up sticks again, you see, and where do we go to live? And I think what happened is the chap who was taking over from was retiring or something, and he had a house in Kenton, which was just between near Harrow. So we took that one, and I was still hanging around waiting to hear what was going to happen to me. So after a few weeks I thought, well, I've got no job, no money. I found out there was another cable company had offices down on the embankment, Callender's Cables. So I contacted them and said, any chance of a job? And of course, they were glad of people coming because they were losing. So I went and worked for them for while I was waiting. And then I had to go for my aircrew medical. Just a matter of form, no way. Passed again.
What were they looking for with an aircrew medical? What were the types of things that they were looking for?
Good eyesight, for one thing. You had a 20/20 vision, though, and just general good health. He said, okay, you're a fit aircrew. Go and see this gentleman, tell him what you want to be. I thought, oh, I hadn't thought of that, what do you want to be? You want a pilot, or a navigator, gunner, monitor for it? Oh, God, I don't know. I said, oh, no. Oh, navigator. He said, not pilot. I said, I couldn't say, couldn't have a dream of flying a plane. I couldn't even drive a car. I said, navigator. Okay, he said, well, okay, you're on what we call deferred service now. Go home and wait. All waiting, Eventually, I had instructions, report to Lord's Cricket Ground.